Welcome to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast with your host, Catherine M. White, founder and CEO of Accelerated Results 365. If you're an overachiever who's ready to hear what today's bleeding edge successful professionals are doing to create success in their business, you've come to the right place. On the show, Catherine interviews rockstar achievers who share their incredible tips, such as how they plow through roadblocks, outsmart the competition, grow a flourishing business, and reach unparalleled levels of performance. So kick back and get ready for a power-packed, insightful discussion with today's rockstar achiever.
Hello, we are very excited to have Molly Harper-Haynes with us today. Molly currently lives in Seattle, Washington with her two puppies. She is the founder of the Harper-Haynes Group, which has an integrated approach to organizational and revenue development built through a lifetime dedicated to innovation and movement building. Recognizing that the whole is affected by the quality of its part, the Harper-Haynes Group tailors business models and strategies to focus on the linkage of silos within an organization and to work to unravel inefficiencies and gaps that strangle otherwise successful efforts. Molly has a very diverse background, from fundraising for political campaigns in rural communities to United States Senate campaigns to legislation and speechwriting on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. Molly thrives on developing strategies that motivate disparate groups of people towards specific action while building a base for ongoing support. She also works with a variety of businesses, nonprofits, and social enterprise organizations, building high-functioning teams and developing revenue and engagement programs from the ground up, excelling in dispelling fears around fundraising and helping groups develop the skills for quality relationship-based engagement practices. Molly's passion for this work is contagious. Molly, we can see that you definitely have a very diverse background, and we would love to hear more about this. Molly, how did you get started in this industry?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. My uncle was a Speaker of the House in Montana for 28 years, and so I think by the time I could open my mouth as a baby, I was looking at envelopes and stamps for political campaigns. So my always involved in politics from the get-go. And then in terms of, one of my main specialties is revenue, either fundraising or investment strategies, finance. And I had this one conversation with the man who turned into my mentor. And basically, he said, you know, what is your main goal in life? And I was like, well, I want to have the biggest impact possible. I want to help the most people. You know, I'm young and excited about those things. And he said, well, money is the biggest barrier to success. It's the biggest challenge. It's the biggest stressor. Like, if you want to help a cause, help it raise money. And that just made such sense to me. And then when you put the relationship aspect to it, where, you know, if you do this well, if you do this work well, it's a completely unequal exchange. I mean, what the person gets who gives money can last a lifetime if you do it well. I mean, the sense of contributing is like a human need. And that organization, you know, it'll support them for a while, but it's one of the most rewarding things I think you can do. And whether it's an investment ask for our business or if it's, a fundraising ask for either politics or nonprofits, I just find it, one, super fun, two, very rewarding, and then also you get to see the impact of what you do kind of tenfold, because $1 can do so many different things for an agency. So after that conversation, I decided to basically go into the dark arts, which is fundraising for politics. And then I just didn't say no to any good opportunity, really. And so I've just woven this very bizarre history together, which all contributes to me being able to kind of walk into an organization in crisis or transition or growth and say, okay, let's figure out what the problem is and address it holistically. So it's definitely started in political fundraising.
I see. And it's pretty obvious that when you see an opportunity, you seize that. And I think that's great, and that's very important when you're seeking for success. Sometimes we don't know, or we're looking for a specific opportunity, but it's good to keep our eyes open to see what opportunities are around us, because sometimes we end up going a little bit different direction than we might have intended originally.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely, and I would just add to that. I mean, my list of jobs is actually quite bizarre and long, but one of the things, you know, like one of my first jobs was working in a dark room in a photography studio, and, you know, being in the dark for hours and hours at a time and restoring old photos and framing and things. That, I mean, I never didn't think I wanted to be a dark room or a photographer or any of that. But the opportunity presented itself, and I was like, well, it's interesting, let's try it. And out of that, I now understand how to frame things. It's really helped me with design, you know, and so in terms of materials for companies or what have you, I've got a better eye for it because I did that very random job. So it's one of those really interesting things, I think, in terms of success. If you just say yes as much as possible, then it's interesting how your life can kind of weave together.
Absolutely.
And boredom is the worst thing possible in my mind. So. Like the eighth ring of hell.
So in what you've said, we can tell that you are certainly very passionate about what you do. You talked a lot about making a difference and having a big impact. And it sounds like you have definitely done that. What would you say attributed to you being successful in creating that impact that you desired?
That's a great question. And I think the answer is kind of multifaceted. I mean, there's something about me for sure, but I don't believe anyone is successful in a significant way alone. I think it's absolutely impossible. If anybody says that, they're just arrogant. It's not true. And
right.
So I was really lucky to have probably two of the smartest people I've ever met. Three of the smartest people were my parents and my sister. And my parents actually worked in sexual harassment investigations and management support and consulting. And so as kids, I think I learned how to use I statements before I could read. You know, I was saying, when you do that, it makes me feel this way because, you know. But at the dinner table, they would talk about the challenges that their client is facing and the people problems and this staff is unhappy and, oh, this conflict is happening. What do you think we should do about it? I mean, even when we were tiny kids, I mean, that's such a gift to be able to engage in that level of kind of problem solving around people problems at such an early age. So I think that is a huge part of it. And then, you know, as I grew up, you know, I started this business when I was 26 at the peak of the recession, probably. Looking back on it, it was just such a ludicrous idea. But I had colleagues and family, you know, my husband at the time and my parents, they were 100% behind me and supported every step of the way. So it's one of those things that it's, you know, I'd like to, you know, claim credit for myself, but there's no way this would have been possible if I would have had folks who weren't just 100% in support and who were so smart that they challenged me every step of the way, you know. And that's, so I think key to success is surrounding yourself with very smart, very capable, compassionate people. And that's the key to politics too.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. So on the flip side, what would you say was your, or were your biggest roadblocks?
You know, I got to say something I've struggled with. Well, one in politics, to be honest, my gender and my age, that struggle is real. I've definitely experienced a lot of sexism and especially in politics, but, you know, even up until, I would say, just very recently, my age and my gender has been less of an issue. But I still can walk into a room and it's filled with, you know, older white men who are expecting something very particular when they see a young woman walk in. And, you know, I win them over, but it takes me a while. You know, I have to be able to, they have to let me speak and, you know, prove them wrong before I get the benefit of the doubt. And that's just not the case for everyone. But it's a case for a huge portion of our population. So it's helpful to understand, you know, what your appearance looks like and how that, you know, impacts people's perception of you in business. So that, especially when I was getting started on the consulting business, when I just started, I was in my, you know, mid-20s, just starting out. I'd been working already for, you know, doing fundraising for a solid 10 years, but, and work more work than that, you know, previous to that. But still, it was just such a challenge to even get an interview. And that's why, you know, on my website, I don't have a photo of myself, right? I mean, it's just things that I just had to realize, okay, this is a challenge. I've got to figure out how to maneuver this, and I can't let it be part of my identity. You know, I can't have a victim mentality about it, but I have to understand it. And so at one point, after I started the business, my husband joined me in the business, and there were times when it was like, yep, you have to be the one to go do this first meeting because he's not going to listen to a woman as quickly, and we need this to be done fast. And that is just, like, difficult to say out loud. It's difficult to stomach, you know, but, you know, it's the way a lot of, you know, sectors still work. So that was a big challenge for me.
Mm-hmm. So it was a matter of understanding the situation, finding out what the roadblocks were, and then you found a way around those. And it's not clearly not always the way that we would like it to be, but, you know, you have to find what works.
Exactly, and I think that's probably one of the better skills that I have is being able to read somebody's motivation. You know, what are they really trying to get out of this? Kind of read a room, that sort of thing. But mm-hmm. I can look at someone and see their body language and what their face is doing and what are they reacting to positively or negatively, what have you, and get a good sense for kind of who they are and how their brain works. And then what I would honestly, it's kind of no secret, but I would try to shock them in some way. So if they are expecting a prim and proper this or that, I might tell like a slightly off-color joke or something. Or, you know, or if this person doesn't expect me to have financial expertise, I'm going to make sure that I talk about finances. You know, something so that I can change the conversation and change the dynamic a little bit. And it's never inappropriate. It's just when people are a little off center, they're open to seeing something in a different way. And so that's one of the things that I probably do the most is, you know, figure out how to create a dynamic between people that leaves a possibility open for something different to happen. And that's a challenge, but I think that's a skill if more people thought about and cultivated, and that's a lot of what I teach people how to do. You know, we'd have a lot more innovation and a lot more creativity in our businesses, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is definitely a skill.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So how about as far as the people that you work with, your clients, what kind of roadblocks do you see them coming up against?
Mm. Well, the recession was a whole separate thing. I mean, there are always external factors that are challenging, but a recession like that, when everybody freaks out and kind of closes up their pocketbooks either for investment or for, you know, fund giving or what have you, that's a challenge. But in terms of kind of consistently what I see as a problem are a lack of transparency between a CEO and an ED and their board or whatever body that they answer to. There's a lot of CEOs and EDs that hold control really, really tightly, and communication and information is not flowing freely, and a lot of horrible things can happen when that happens. So there's been a number of times where I've been called in to say, hey, we're facing a, you know, a financial cliff here in 6 months. We don't know what's wrong. Like, we're doing everything right. Well, I would look at their books, or I'd investigate their, you know, do some data analysis, do conversations with people, and realize that, you know, that it's, there's a lack of communication, and not everybody's on the same page, and people have, you know, problems with expectations, and sometimes you can have a leader that is misleading their staff, their board. So it's that communication piece is huge. And then the other big thing, probably number one thing, though, in terms of, like, if I'm vetting a client, whether I'll take this client or not, is, are they actually ready to change? Like, are they actually ready to try something new? Because clearly, if what they were already doing was working, they wouldn't be calling me, right?
Right.
Or if they're about ready to grow in a huge way, clearly what they've been doing has not completely prepared them to do that growth on their own. So, but I think a lot of folks think that, we're ready to do it because we're going to do a project. Yeah, but are you really ready to say goodbye to any old ways of doing things, change your company culture? I mean, change is very difficult, and when people really aren't ready for it and they haven't gotten everybody on board in terms of being ready to change something, then it'll fail every time. The project will fail every time.
Mm-hmm. And how do you help overcome these roadblocks?
I would say the number one thing for me is information. You know, having folks truly understand exactly where they are and what the impact of what they have been doing or not been doing. And as soon as I think you're able to paint a very clear picture, connect the dots, say this is what's happening with your revenue line, or you're having issues with your expenses, or your communication approach is off, or whatever it may be, you have a leadership problem. That's quite common. As soon as everyone gets on the same page about it, it becomes very difficult for any one person to keep in that denial stage and to keep saying, well, let's just go harder at what we've been doing already. You know, with all the information on the table, it's pretty difficult not to say, okay, well, what are we going to do about it? You know, we've got to try something new because this is not working. But that also takes an element of courage. So I think really the information is huge, and doing like really, really quality analysis is big. I think as consultants, a lot of us, we could do a lot better in terms of the depth and quality of our analysis. But then I'm just with them. You know, I'm like, it's scary. It's terrifying. Like, usually nobody's calling me because they're totally happy and nothing's wrong, or they're not worried about something or nervous about something.
Right.
So I just be with them and, like, listen to them and realize that this is a very personal thing. Whatever challenge they're going through is personal. You know, pretending that you can separate completely personal and professional is ludicrous, I think. And so understanding their fears, talking them through it, a lot of coaching goes in through this, and just caring about them as people. And so with that caring, you know, compassion mixed with the information, in my opinion, that's kind of the recipe for at least as best that I can get them ready for it, but then they still have to take the next step. And some folks just aren't ready to do that. But that certainly helps overcome about 90%, I would say, of that sort of barrier.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what I heard was the biggest key is listening, and by that listening, you are showing that you care and that you're there, interested in helping them and bettering them.
Exactly, and asking a lot of questions, you know, just asking about how are they dealing with this personally? Like, how are you feeling about this? Like, what's happening in your gut? Like, is your body tense? Like, what is happening with you? at this moment because that awareness, it also helps them become aware of how they're feeling in a challenging or stressful or exciting time. And with that personal awareness, you can really kind of tap into your power as a professional. So, asking a lot of questions about their personal well-being, it really helps, articulate compassion, but it also helps them as professionals to be able to have awareness about that, those sort of things.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, those were all very great tips that you have given us in how we can be better successful, how we can help others be better successful, and just wonderful tips, and I really appreciate everything that you shared with us, Molly.
Thank you for tuning in to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast. If you are looking to reach new levels of success by plowing through your roadblocks, outsmarting your competition, growing a flourishing business, or reaching unparalleled levels of performance, go to www.acceleratedresults365.com or email Catherine at Catherine@acceleratedresults365.com and learn how you can get started with Accelerated Results 365 today.